Manola Dargis. Dargis is co-chief film critic for The New York Times. She grew up in Manhattan's East Village, but now lives in Los Angeles. Dargis told Steve Paulson what she thinks the role of film criticism is.
I don't know if I want to get too grandiose, but I see my own role as being someone who can be part of a conversation. I see movie reviewing, movie criticism, and some people make a distinction between the two, but I tend not to, as just part of a conversation. And we tend to be among the very first people in that conversation. It's part of a long discourse. I always try to respond to my email, at least this, the kind of more civilized email. I don't really have that kind of relationship that, let's say, bloggers have with their commentators. I always do think of it as part of an ongoing conversation about the movies. That's really what I see it as, is to, you know, I have long experience. I've watched a lot more movies than most normal people. I think I have an abnormal and I can, as a consequence, bring to bear a lot of knowledge. But I just see myself as part of an ongoing conversation.
Well, it's really interesting hearing you say that, because you have avoided words like pointing out what's good or bad about a film, which I think most people would assume is what critics are supposed to do.
Yes, I think it's trying to get beyond a kind of Manichaean idea about, you know, how you look at a movie. There are movies that are, you know, very blatantly terrible, and, you know, those are often the most amusing films to write about, unfortunately. Perhaps it's all the stuff in between that's a lot more interesting. And part of the role of the critic, I think, should be that you help people look at movies and to kind of understand that movies are not just stories, they're visual stories. There's a different kind of way of telling a story that happens in a movie that happens differently in a book, even though, let's say, a lot of people don't really attend to those differences, perhaps as much as they should. And my role, in part, is to kind of say, look how this person is shooting this. See how meaning is leaking into the image and what the director, for instance, is trying to say without actually using dialogue.
But that almost sounds like you're writing more for people who've actually seen the movie, because then they can respond to the specifics that you're saying, whereas I'm guessing that maybe most people who read your reviews have not seen the movie and are trying to figure out whether they should go or not.
I think that I do that a little bit. I'm not doing a close analysis of the sort that you would find in an academic journal. You know, I'm not doing count shots. I'm not saying, you know, at 22.3 minutes into the film, you'll see a lateral pan, et cetera. I'm not doing that kind of close analysis. What I am is just is the way that you would find an art critic, someone like Peter Sheldahl in The New Yorker. And, you know, he's wonderful, and I'm not even suggesting I'm like that, and among other things, I don't usually have the room, the space in the paper to kind of make those longer, more leisurely arguments. When an art critic writes about a painting, they're going to tell you if the artist has worked in watercolor, oil, acrylic. I think that it's important with movies to also describe, did someone shoot in digital? How does that look specifically versus how it looks if it was shot in celluloid? You know, it's not too specific, but I'm also trying to bring that into the conversation as much as plot details. Plot is often the least interesting thing. Boy meets girl, so what? That's not even my original line. That, apparently, that's a, I don't know if this is an apocryphal story, but that's a pitch that Bertolt Brecht was trying to sell to Hollywood back in the 1940s. I think he failed. But really, you can reduce a lot of movies to that. And so what else is there to write about? Do you really want to read just a plot summary? You know, you can go on. There's a lot of online sites that provide that service. I think that, you know, if you're reading a critic in the New York Times, you expect a different degree of engagement.
I have to ask about something that your colleague at the Times, A.O. Scott, recently wrote. He did an essay about arts criticism, and he said, a remnant of over-entitled old media graybeards are fighting a rearguard action against the democratic forces of the internet, clinging to threadbare cultural authority in the face of their own obsolescence. Everyone's a critic, or maybe no one is. What do you think of that assessment?
Well, I think it's important to remember that this article that Tony wrote, which was published on April 4th, Tony being A.O. Scott, was couched as that the received wisdom is thus. This is a topic that we, both of us, return to again and again in our own conversations with each other. I don't think that Tony believes any more than I do that there's a crisis in criticism. What we completely understand, working at The New York Times, where we had to take a 5% pay cut but are extremely lucky, unlike some of our other colleagues, that we still have jobs, is that there's a crisis in publishing. I find the kind of attempt that some people try to do to distinguish online, people who are strictly online and kind of old media or dead tree media or however you want to couch it, kind of ridiculous. You know, I've been online since the LA Weekly had a website. I reach millions of readers, which is a frightening idea, every single day, week.
But I think what's changed is that if you want to just read about a movie and you go online just to see what's being said, you may be directed to a critic at the New York Times or the LA Times, but you may not. I mean, probably most of the hits that are going to get pulled up are actually online reviews. And I guess it raises the question of whether people like you are becoming less important.
Absolutely not, because, I mean, I don't know about my own personal importance, but if you actually do a search on Google, the New York Times online review, and that's my point, my reviews are online. I don't see myself as a print journalist, and neither does the New York Times, from what I can tell, see itself as just a print. You know, it's not about print. It has one of the best websites, and I'm not going to do an advertisement for the Times. God knows they can do it themselves. But the fact is that we don't have that idea. We don't make that distinction at the paper. I don't see why everyone else continues to do it. It is a false dichotomy.
Now, there was a time when...
I hear a bit of skepticism there.
it's really interesting hearing you say that. Yeah, I like it, actually. I like sort of the ringing defense of...
It's not a defense. It's a matter of empirical fact. You know, my mother reads me online. I personally get the paper because I'm old enough to actually really like walking around the house and like going outside and carrying my newspaper. But the fact is, most people read me online. These are different platforms. We are so beyond that false dichotomy. That's a discussion of a couple years ago. The Times, I think, and again, I would say that the Times is really in the vanguard in terms of using different platforms. I mean, the website is fantastic. Again, you know, when I write, my work is usually it's posted online before it's in a physical paper, you know?
Do you think your reviews have much impact on a movie's success at the box office?
I think a positive review in the New York Times by one of the chief critics can certainly help and very possibly might hurt an independent film. I mean, the thing about big budget studio movies now is they basically buy their opening weekends with advertising. They really don't need critics. They're just going to have wall-to-wall advertising. Where we can help are the little movies that just don't have the money to buy big ads or television commercials. And it also depends on the placement. If a review is on, let's say, the cover of the paper, that's even better. You've hit the jackpot. If you've got a positive review from Tony or myself, you know, on the cover of the New York Times, that matters. But only for small movies.
Yeah. Do you worry about writing a negative review, especially of a low-budget, let's say, independent film? Do you feel some sense of responsibility that you might be killing that film?
No. My responsibility is chiefly to the truth of the movie as I see it. My responsibility is to my own honesty. My responsibility is to the reader. I can't worry about what was involved in the making of these movies. Movies are extremely difficult to make, no matter if they're huge blockbusters or really tiny little independents. They're difficult. They're labors of love. They're madness. But I can't think about that. That would be really crippling. What I can do, and I have done, and this is something that Tony and I do very quietly, is that if one of us really dislikes a movie and the other one really likes it, we will switch, because nobody needs another negative review. You know, we don't do it all the time. We just do it on occasion.
Now, do you treat a review of a blockbuster, let's say Clash of the Titans, any differently than you would a more intelligent film like Fantastic Mr. Fox? Do you write it differently?
No, I don't write it differently. It just, you know, one's a terrible movie and one's a really great movie. So the adverbs and adjectives will definitely be different. The attitude, the pleasure with which I write, that will definitely be different. But I'm still sitting in my office and I'm still pecking away. You know, there's no real difference. And I don't take a kind of, I don't think that Hollywood movies, studio movies should be treated with any differently than an independent film, in the sense that I'm going to be harder on them or, you know, meaner or whatever. That's just absurd. You know, you have to deal with the work in front of you, not with your own prejudices.
I've read that you sometimes get some nasty mail about some of your reviews, and maybe especially when you were writing for the LA Weekly. And in fact, didn't the second Garfield movie take a shot at you by naming the villain Lord Dargis?
Yes, I believe that they did. I think that's an extremely high compliment. I have friends who made me a wonderful T-shirt that I wear on occasion that says Lord Dargis. It's in kind of goth letters.
Manola Dargis is the co-chief film critic of the New York Times. She spoke with Steve Paulson.